keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
You have just tuned into Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. For the next hour, your host, Dr. Tom Rogers, and Jim Velas will expose the business diseases that bleed your profits and rupture the quality of your life. Now welcome your host.
Hello, I'm Dr. Tom Rogers.
And I'm Jim Velas, and you're listening to the Rogers Group, streaming worldwide. And today, by popular demand, we're bringing back a past guest, Chuck Kugel, a human resources attorney and specialist in labor and employment law.
The name of our show is Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. Now, at the Rogers Group, what we do is that we create and maintain healthy organizations by removing diseases, diseases being anything that detracts from profits. Now, last week's show, we did a little spoof on anorexic leadership. And the person that, of course, I impersonated, someone named Ebenezer Scrooge, who was famous from the Charles Dickens stories, and Jim was Dr. Leadership. And we had some fun with this, and Jim asked me a series of questions covering, you know, basic areas, customer service, management, quality, and so on and so forth. And this Mr. Scrooge was really sort of a charlatan and did everything himself, just wanted to have cheap products, didn't want to delegate anything, and he was a dictator. And this was, the whole thing came across as someone that wouldn't listen to anyone else, totally 100% doing it their way or the highway, and didn't like customers, didn't like people. The only thing he seemed to like were the those killer African honeybees in his backyard, for those of you who remember that. In any event, what we are trying to point out is that's one way of running a business, but there's other more progressive ways. And but we wanted you, first of all, to see in its extreme a very unprogressive way, a very dysfunctional way of running a business. So that was last week. And that leads us on to this week. Now, Jim, did we get any emails this past week that you want to share with the audience?
Actually, we've got several. Many of them were saying that even though we did a spoof on anorexic leadership, even people who were who thought of themselves as being an accomplished leader saw just a little bit of themselves in some of the things that we did. And I have another question I'm going to save for our guest as we get later into the program. It was a very specific question about what we're going to be talking about today. So, Tom, why don't you tell us about today's show?
Okay, well, we're excited to bring back Charles Kugel, who is an experienced human resource attorney and consultant. Now, recently, Charles gave a presentation at Northwestern University on how labor and employment laws impact businesses, especially small businesses, which generally don't have the resources needed to ensure that every I is dotted and every T is crossed. By listening to Chuck, then, small businesses can make sure they do the right things to stay out of legal trouble. So welcome back, Chuck, and how are you doing?
Pretty good, Dr. Tom and Jim. How are you guys doing?
Just terrific. And Chuck, before we get too far into this thing, could you just recap, and for those that missed your first show, tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm a labor and employment attorney representing management with 12 and a half years of experience in the field, 5.5 years of my own practice now representing management. I've worked both management and labor side. I used to represent a labor union, Airline Pilots Association, United Airlines Pilots Council in Chicago. What else? I've worked for the Chicago Public Schools also and have been involved in hundreds of investigations, negotiations, court and regulatory agency cases. I do have my own website, charlesakrugel.blogspot.com, which discusses my practice in labor and employment law in general. Is that good enough?
Well, that's terrific. And, you know, what we promised our audience today is we're going to go over some of the questions that you were asked over at the Northwestern University Small Business Development Center.
Sure.
And before we get into that, could you just tell us about the Northwestern University and what they're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, in Illinois, in general, Illinois has federal funding to open up small business development centers in the area of, in Illinois, in the state. And in the Chicagoland area, there's a number of these small business development centers. Northwestern and Evanston itself, the city of Evanston and Northwestern University jointly run one. And they basically consult or involve like a number of, I don't know how many different businesses, but there's a more, I believe there's more than 50 of them, small businesses that are in various industries, technology, distribution, services, and they also have what's called a tech center in Evanston, where they actually have an incubator for these businesses too. So they actually have housing or sites for the businesses, along with a lot of infrastructure, business type and technology infrastructure for them. And basically the presentation was a two-hour presentation, a free-flowing roundtable Q&A discussing labor and employment laws that affect these businesses, what the cost can be, the other sorts of impacts can be on these businesses, which laws actually apply to them and don't apply, because there's a lot of limitations as to what laws, in terms of the number of employees that these laws apply to also.
Now, who would typically attend one of these seminars?
Interestingly enough, I had a few attorneys from other fields in it who were interested in learning more about labor and employment law, and then there were also small business owners and people in small businesses who were interested in learning more about human resources, labor and employment law, and what the pitfalls or the obstacles are, what to look for.
Now, Chuck, you know, we seem to have a varied audience in terms of the types of businesses and the size of businesses. Is there anything we're going to talk about today that would exclude some larger businesses or corporations from what we're going to be talking about?
No, actually, the laws apply to all businesses over, I'd say, 50 or more employees. There's only a few laws that apply to maybe that don't apply to businesses of 50 or fewer, or maybe 15 or fewer. So, you know, a lot of the laws I discussed were laws that apply to companies of fewer than 50 employees, or most of them, but by virtue of the definition or the way these laws are defined or explained, they apply basically to all companies. That's what, I guess that's sort of a paradox of these laws.
Well, that's terrific, then, Chuck. Well, let me start by asking you a couple of questions, and you kind of give us the answers that you've got over in your Northwestern seminar.
Mm-hmm.
And if I screw up the question a little, just please correct me. So the first question I want to ask you is, can I ask job applicants about drug and medicine uses, arrest records, or criminal convictions?
Convictions.
Convictions.
Yeah, I don't think you want anybody who's going to criminal conventions.
Yeah, sorry about that.
But anyway, generally, you have to be very careful. There are, it depends also on your industry. As a general rule, I'd say no, don't get into issues which relate to any sort of disabilities, any sort of psychological or physical maladies that the person might have, anything that would protect them within the confines of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which, by the way, the ADA protects employees who work for or are applying to employers of 15 or more employees. So here is one of the paradoxes. You have businesses that are less than 15 employees that it wouldn't apply to. However, there's a lot of state and local laws around the country that these laws, the disability laws, apply to every employer. So you may talk about the ADA, or you may refer to the ADA in general terms, but yet the same discussion would equally apply to all businesses that the ADA doesn't apply to. That's sort of one of the paradoxes. But generally, no, you can ask if they have any, if presented with a job description that explains the basic requirements of the job, if there's anything they can't do with or without an accommodation, or with an accommodation. And then relative to arrest records or criminal convictions, most states prohibit arrest records from being discussed. You can't, and depending on the state and depending on the job, the type of job, you can get into criminal convictions. Normally that applies to any jobs relating to health or any child care type services, education, teaching kids, that type of stuff. Or if you're another restriction is, if you're a government contractor or subcontractor, and subcontractor is generally pretty broadly defined. So if you're a government contractor or subcontractor, you may have to inquire about criminal convictions.
You're saying if someone has a felony of some sort, you're not allowed to ask them if they have any felonies?
It depends on the type of job. It depends on how related to the job. I mean, depending on the type of job, it depends on how related to the job a felony conviction is. So generally, no, you can't ask about arrest records or arrest, but in some circumstances, yes, you can ask about convictions. You would need to be able to show that there's a tie, some sort of connection between the criminal conduct you're prohibiting, the convicted criminal conduct you're prohibiting, and the requirements of the job.
You know, I'll bet a lot of companies, though, just as a matter of the way they do business, ask about, you know, convictions and stuff, even if it is against the law.
Yeah, I've seen it happen a lot.
Yeah, because even like people that I've known, you know, told me that they typically, you know, that kind of question has come up, you know, on felonies. And I got to believe now, I'm thinking back, that it had nothing to do with the kind of job that was, I couldn't see any tie into the job.
Yeah, you're right, and I agree with you. I've seen it a lot on job applications, too. I think these... Go on. Go ahead. Oh, I think these companies need to be carefully scrutinizing their job applications, their employment, their hiring process, and also their job descriptions, validating the processes and the written documents.
Now, how would I go about finding out if my particular application would allow me to ask that question?
Well, there's specialists in the field like myself, other consultants in HR. There's a lot of information out there on the Internet you could research. A lot of it depends on how you define your terms when you're researching on your own. But generally speaking, if you're looking at validating a job description, reviewing or scrutinizing your employment processes, including your job applications, you may want to have a specialist look at that, some sort of third party, to make sure that that these processes are all legally compliant.
Absolutely amazing. Let me ask you another question on the drug and medicine usage.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to be having people use some heavy-duty equipment, how would I go about making sure that they're fully aware and don't have any restrictions placed on them?
You mean restrictions placed on them?
Well, you know, if I was taking some sort of, and I don't know anything about drugs, but if I was taking a drug that said, do not operate any heavy equipment, how would I get around that and ask that question?
Yeah, I think in that circumstance you can ask, based on the job description, what the requirements of the job are, if there are any limitations that they have that would prevent them from doing the essential functions of the job, the basic requirements of the job. And you could require them to take a pre-employment physical or generally it's usually after-employment physical. In a lot of states, or there's a lot of laws and regulations which require after-employment physical after the offer.
Well, terrific. Chuck, I think we're going to have to take a break now.
Okay.
So what I'd like to do is tell the audience here that they're listening to Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. This is Dr. Tom Rogers and Jim Velas, along with our guest, Chuck Krugel. We'll be right back.
Business information you need, from the stock market to starting and managing your business. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
Are you looking for a unique perspective on today's market from an experienced economist? Well, look no further. Listen to The Economic Contrarian with host Mike Norman every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Mike and his guests will discuss new trends in the marketplace, as well as emerging companies and opportunities. So if you want in-depth analysis from a contrarian point of view, don't miss The Economic Contrarian Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
All rise. This honorable court is now in session.
Please be seated. The defendant shall remain standing. The defendant is before this court today for sentencing, having been previously found guilty of a gun crime by a jury of his peers. Given the severity of this crime, it is the order of this court that the defendant be sentenced to a term of 5 years imprisonment. Defendant will be remanded to custody immediately.
On June 4th, my big brother was sentenced to 5 years in prison for a gun crime. That day, he sentenced me to 5 years of walking home alone from school.
When you commit a gun crime, your family pays the price. Gun crimes hit home. A public service announcement brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Learn to thrive, not just survive in business and careers. Unleash your full potential and greatness with the Thrive Factor, unleashing your potential. With tactical coaches and success masters, hosts Dori Willer and Eva Gregory. Dori, Eva, and their Masters of Thriving expert guests inform, educate, elucidate, and inspire with leading-edge information. The Thrive Factor, unleashing your potential with Dori Willer and Eva Gregory, broadcast each Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Business Channel. The Thrive Factor, success and inspiration at the click of a mouse.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
We're back with Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. To call in with a question or comment, dial 866-472-5790. Now back to your hosts, Dr. Tom Rogers and Jim Velas.
Hello, this is Jim Velas along with my co-host, Dr. Tom Rogers, and our guest today is Chuck Krugel, an employment attorney, and we were talking about the questions that he was asked at a recent Northwestern University Small Business Development Center seminar. And so we'll get right back into this because I'm sure there's a lot of people here that just are dying to get a lot of answers. And by the way, you know, just give us a call if you want some answers and get some pre-legal advice, which is very hard to come by these days. Let me start off with this question for you in this segment, Chuck. Should I have an employee handbook, manuals, or policies?
Yeah, generally speaking, every company should have some form of them, whether it's just a short one-page document or something longer. I believe all companies should have something relating to the culture of the company or some sort of statement as to what the company is and how they treat their employees.
Well, what about the rules and regulations, you know, as they might apply to, you know, coming in late or being tardy or vacations and all of that sort of thing? How do people generally relate that to the people?
Yeah, I think what you're looking at is, overall, it's an issue of communication and what are you trying to accomplish? And whenever I'm consulting with a client or prospective client regarding what they want out of policies or handbooks, practices, procedures, whatever, it's what are you trying to accomplish with this? What are the issues that you're dealing with on a daily basis or on a macro basis that are causing you problems that you feel you need, policies, procedures, whatever? And then what do you think is the best way to communicate this to your workforce? How does your workforce assimilate information? Are these technologically advanced people who read computers or are into interactive learning, or are they people who just want a quick and easy document or something explained to them verbally, something that's explained bilingually to them? What is the best way to get this across to them? And generally speaking, you're talking about anything from something that could be one page up to hundreds of pages, depending on the type of business and industry, especially like in transportation.
Right. That kind of brings me up to the email I get from some folks, or actually a particular lady before the week, and asked me to ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
She said that several years ago she started a small business that has continually grown, has never had an employee handbook, and has had kind of a liberal policy in calling in sick. And now, recently, within the past 9 months, one of her employees is continually taking sick time off to the tune of 2 or 3 days a month and has been historical with the company, has been paid for all of this time. And now this business owner would like to know, how can she put an end to this policy without getting herself in legal trouble?
So this employee's been calling in sick now for...
For 9 months.
No, okay. Well, basically what you're talking about is implementing a policy that's going to apply equally to all employees across the board, including the owner or the upper management. You could do anything such as a job abandonment, no call, no show, maybe typically the industry standard is 3 days of no call, no show. You could grant the number of sick days that they could use, and then beyond those sick days, you're talking about unpaid time off, assuming that there's no other leave laws or regulations that apply to that company, depending on the state or industry. You could also institute excessive absenteeism policies, such as more than a certain number of absences in a week or a month, year, whatever, will result in disciplinary action up to including discharge. So, you know, there's a number of options, a number of things you could do to rein in absenteeism, including days off and tardiness.
So she could implement a policy sort of in the middle of a her business career without jeopardizing any kind of lawsuits. Is that what you're saying? As long as it applied to everybody?
Yeah, she could do that pretty much at any time. I think the trick is when you're looking at why you're doing this, it's not just the absenteeism, but you're also talking about a form of documentation for your business that could protect you also in instances of unemployment compensation claims or workers' compensation claims and other forms of legal action against the company. It is another form of documentation. So there's no law, as far as I'm aware, that says you have to have these policies or procedures. Now, some, you know, again, it could be different for government contractors and subcontractors, or if you're required to have an affirmative action plan, things like that. But generally speaking, there's no law that requires an HR policy or handbook, but you may want to have these to protect you from claims and contentious employees who are talking about lawsuits or complaints or unemployment comp, things like that, because it is a form of documentation.
And I suspect that that if you had this handbook, you know, we're kind of looking at this from the perspective of the employer, but it would also then start protecting the employees against unfair being taken advantage of. Or would that be a true statement?
Yeah, it would help to protect employees too, and it's not just for the. It also helps to protect both the employers and the employees from regulatory agencies, the government, because they love to see these types of documents, handbooks and policies. So you're talking about, you know, you're talking about keeping the government out of your back pocket, or helping to keep them out of your back pocket.
Yeah, virtually everybody that we've spoken to in the past, maybe 2 or 3 years, they have brought up the government interference in business in some way, shape, or form. So
yeah.
I guess anything you can do to protect yourself from them coming in and invading your territory is a great thing.
Yeah, and handbooks, policies, procedures are all going to do that. Anything that makes the government's job easier when they're scrutinizing your practices when it comes to unemployment compensation claims, workers' compensation claims, or any sort of agency complaints or lawsuits is going to be, ultimately, it's going to save you money and time down the road. You know, sort of a pay me now or pay me later proposition.
Right. Chuck, one of the, related to, you know, employers protecting themselves, that, something related to that that I understand that you've talked about at the, your program at Northwestern is the Employment Record Disclosure Act.
Yeah.
And, I have a note here that's saying that, like, employers providing a job reference to a prospective employer will have civil immunity if it provides truthful information and includes only job performance information.
Mm-hmm.
So my question about that, if someone was so many times when companies that, for example, when we talk to them, we hear situations where, yeah, you know, company, the manager was saying, I called up the other company and all I got was, you know, the time that that person worked, you know, from, you know, in the company for so many years and saying, yes, that person was an employee. Now so you're saying here that they can provide job performance information if for example, that you're saying if they've done performance appraisals, however they came out, they can show them that, or because a lot of companies think that giving out negative job performance information can lead to problems. They don't want to do it.
Yeah. All right, first of all, the Employment Record Disclosure Act is Illinois law, that's state. However, there are provisions or laws in other states that are probably similar, are similar, or there are legal theories in negligent hiring, wrongful termination, or different forms of hiring or defamation, slander, libel laws that apply the same standards, to in other states. Now, with the Employment Record Disclosure Act, interestingly, that applies to all employers in the state of Illinois. The thing with this is that, and I said this in my first interview with you guys back in December, is that I always advise clients to basically just disclose, yes, they worked for me, the dates of employment and the positions held, and I still, you know, and I stick to that, mainly because it's going to limit your trouble, it's going to limit your exposure. Now, the law, the Employment Record Disclosure Act, and some of these other legal theories, libel, slander, defamation, hiring, whatever, in other states, they do protect employers for giving out information, honest information or sincere information in good faith relative to job performance. Yeah, you can be protected, but for a small business, who my audience was at this Evanston Northwestern Small Business Development Center seminar, why do they want to put themselves through the hassle of any sort of litigation or defending themselves in court or have these problems? As long as, you know, as long as the other employer who they're dealing with across the table, so to speak, is not saying anything bad about them to a candidate, a job candidate, they're better off for it. And the way to limit that is just to give them, just to give specifics such as dates of employment, whether they worked for you, and their job titles.
Well, was the underlying intention here in the case of those that wrote the law, was that as far as giving out job performance information, that it should be something on paper that maybe like past job appraisals, or is that something they could just verbalize over the phone?
I think the intent, and I haven't read the legislative history behind this, but I'm assuming that the intent behind this was to protect employers from giving out information that's in good faith and honest to other employers, so that they're protecting each other from negligent hiring.
So whether the bad performance information was sent out on paper to the prospective employer or just verbalized over the phone wouldn't make any difference then.
In this form, well, it depends on what the information is. It's what the information is and what the job is. I mean, if you're talking about a highly technical job and you're just giving out information verbally, I think that would be more closely scrutinized by a third party than would somebody who's a clerk in a Walmart or, you know, just a Target or something like that. So it depends on the job. But if you're talking about performance appraisals, documented performance appraisals, then you're also talking about something that should be a validated process. So if you're giving out, if it's, you know, garbage in, garbage out, if the performance appraisal process is bad and you're giving out information related to that, then you still could be held to a measure of liability.
Right. That's why it sounds like your idea is best with small companies. Stick to the basics and stick away from performance.
Yeah, small companies and large companies, stick to what you do best and let a specialist help you with the rest of it.
All right. Well, that was very helpful, Chuck. And it's time to take a break here. This is Dr. Tom Rogers along with Jim Bellis and our special guest, human resource attorney, labor specialist, Chuck Krugel, here on Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. We'll be right back in just a few moments, folks. Thanks a lot.
Listen wherever you are. 24-hour business and financial news. Solid, focused, and informed. The leader in business talk. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
All right, you 4 years old son, ready for the big leagues. Get your bat on, buddy. There you go, helmet.
Silly head.
Okay, that's right, your thigh guards. Now don't forget your mouth guard. You don't want to be losing teeth in your first game. Well, they're baby teeth, but yeah, put it in.
Daddy.
Don't let them worry you. They may be over 200 pounds and kind of mean looking, but you're ready for them. Just run through them. Here's the ball. Run!
Daddy.
Don't look at me. Run with it. Go, boy, run!
But I could get hurt.
No pain, no gain. Now run!
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult, so why put them in adult seatbelts? If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat.
Ah, you should have straight-armed them.
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
You hear business show after business show all geared towards improving a company's bottom line. But what about your bottom line? How come no one ever talks about that? Finally, a show dedicated to the worker. The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, The Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, The Crow Show is aimed specifically at the worker and their environment. From work skills and technology to dealing with bosses and coworkers, The Crow Show will give you insight on how to survive and prosper in today's workplace. The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, The Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line of Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Why is Pepsi cooler than Coke? Why are iPods so popular? In 2005, how can you launch a successful brand? Want to know? Learn about the fascinating and intriguing world of graphic design and branding on Design Matters with Debbie Millman. Every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time, Debbie Millman will provide you with a provocative look into the stimulating world of design as it intersects with contemporary culture. Hear what the experts have to say about creating, maintaining, and launching a brand in today's challenging marketplace. Join us every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time for Design Matters with Debbie Millman, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
We're back with Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. To call in with a question or comment, dial 866-472-5790. Now back to your hosts, Dr. Tom Rogers and Jim Velas.
This is Dr. Tom Rogers along with my co-host, Jim Velas. Now, folks, if you want to get in touch with us here at the Rogers Group, our phone number is 847-562-9766. That's 847-562-9766. Our email address is tom@drtomrogers.com or jim@drtomrogers.com, and that Rogers is R-O-G-E-R-S spelled. And finally, our website is www.drtomrogers.com. Now, Chuck, how could people that want to find out more about these legal laws and human resource, and how that affects human resources, call you?
Sure, they can reach me at 312-804-3851 or email at charlesakrugel@gmail.com or via my website at http://charlesakrugel.blogspot.com.
Yes, you're another one of these bloggers out there in America.
Oh, yeah.
And, it's become quite the hot thing these days.
That's great.
Yes, and it certainly is. Now, we were talking lastly about the Employment Record Discrimination Act. Of course, that's a state of Illinois thing, but mm-hmm. wherever you are across the country, I think your message was, even if the law is written so that there appears to be some flexibility, the less you say as a prospective employer, or as a former employer to a prospective employer about a job applicant, someone who worked for you formerly, the better. And basically dates where they, confirming that they did indeed work for you, and the dates that they worked for you, and probably better to stay out of performance.
Yeah, it's going to prevent you from getting into trouble under, this is legalese, but it's going to help you prevent trouble from common law theories of defamation, libel, slander, things that former employees or job applicants can hammer you with.
Okay, that's good. Now, let's move this conversation forward here and talk about communications in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Can an employer regulate written, verbal, and electronic communications?
Yes.
How so?
In short, so they could do it through written policies, practices. They could regulate what is said about other employees, the company, especially when it comes to secrets, trade secrets, or upcoming or product development or services, development of services, things like that.
I think of, like, emails, for example, as almost, take it, harken it back to the days of, maybe World War II or something, where there's secret, where the agents, secret spy agents are out there, and they're sending coded messages back and forth. And now, that, really can determine the course of the war. They're trying to break the enemy's code. And here you have a situation where people don't realize, employees, for example, that the company can keep a lot of this information. They think because it's a company email, but they think it just goes to them or anything they send out. But the company, as a matter of fact, can store all this stuff and people can end up saying stuff that they regret. Let's say if employee A criticizes employee B, and employee B maybe is a top manager or leader, and before you know it, the company is aware of what's being said and things going on under the surface.
Yeah, the computer, when you're talking about a computer, a cell phone, any sort of device that's provided by the employer in the workplace, it's no different than a locker and having a company locker or desk or anything like that. I mean, this is company provided. They have control over it. It's not for your personal use or pleasure. So it's the same, it's the same. And if it's a company car or computer that you're using 1,000 miles away from the company headquarters or workplace, the same policies would apply.
Right.
Just
Chuck, does that mean that the company could legally read my email that I sent out on that computer?
Yeah. Yeah, they could legally read it. Generally speaking, the only way, you know, the only limitations, restrictions would be if the company grants you rights, like through policies or a handbook or something like that, or if there's a law that states you have rights, you know, or union contract, something like that. So those would be some of the exceptions. But generally speaking, yeah, they can regulate what you use email for. They could regulate what websites you look at. They could regulate who you send email to, how long you keep it, or where it's kept.
Very interesting.
The situation, I was actually being interviewed by a journalism student from Northwest University, actually, about blogging in the workplace, and I remarked to her that if a company, if you're blogging in the company parking lot, even if it's your own computer and your own car in the company's parking lot, that could be restricted activity. You could be fired for that.
Right. I can remember some friends I've had that say, you just send an email, don't send it to the company. No matter how harmless it may seem, we're not supposed to receive personal emails.
Mm-hmm. And it's not a First Amendment issue. People always bring up the First Amendment. It's really not a First Amendment issue. If you want to pursue your First Amendment rights, you know, you don't have to work for the company to do that.
Yeah. Well, it's some stuff, the stuff that people really need to be aware of these days.
Well, yeah, let me move on to another question here that's near and dear to Tom and myself.
Sure.
Employee assessments and testing, is that a good idea?
Yeah, I believe assessments and testing are a good idea. It depends really on how you use it and what you use. But generally speaking, it can help you better narrow down who your ideal employee is, your ideal candidate, and who fits that profile the best. So, I mean, obviously there's going to be issues in terms of what's called disparate impact, and that would relate to the test or assessment or whatever instrument or device you're using improperly eliminating minorities or people over the age of 40 or disabled people or females. So you can't have anything that's going to disparately impact a protected class. But generally speaking, as long as it's a validated process, as long as it's good, validated, reliable, and those are technical terms about, you know, validity and reliability. Those aren't terms of art, but as long as it's a valid and reliable device or instrument, I would say use it, especially also in the battery of instruments or devices, a wide-ranging battery that really, you know, a multidisciplinary approach that helps you better define your best candidate and your best and the best person to fill that.
Well said, Chuck. You know, a wide-ranging battery of assessments. And I think, folks, when Chuck's talking about, it's important to remember when Chuck's talking about having validated tests, it's important, extremely important, that the tests be validated on a sample that's similar to the kind of position that the job entails.
Yeah.
For example, if you're hiring someone who's to be a manager of a retail store and that test has been successfully validated on someone in manufacturing, managers in manufacturing, yeah, that's a completely different population. So that's why people like myself, ourselves here at the Rogers Group, get called to make sure that the right assessments, you know, companies call us to make sure that the right assessments are given out for the right kinds of jobs.
Yeah, well, it's an extreme example, but you're not going to want a test for airline pilots that's been validated on a population of monkeys.
Yeah. I hope not. No.
Well, you know, Chuck, and we get asked this question again. If I have a job opening and I have 100 applicants for one job,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to eliminate 99 candidates.
Yeah.
How is it possible for me to eliminate 99 candidates without upsetting somebody?
Well, you're going to upset one or more of those 99 people who got rejected. The issue becomes, what was the criteria for rejecting them? And what was this criteria based on? How did you develop that criteria for rejecting and accepting? So what you're talking about is something that's been validated, proven to be valid and reliable, and something that doesn't disparately impact against any protected class, and, you know, something which is basically, or essentially, fair across the board.
Well, yeah, but let me stay with you on that, if you don't mind, just for
sure.
A second, Chuck. Let's say my testing narrows the 100 candidates down to 95. Mm-hmm. And now the down to five candidates. We've eliminated 95 based on the testing and assessments. Now I'm down to five candidates who are reasonably all equal, and I'm going to go through some sort of an interviewing process, which becomes at this point subjective.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to eliminate four out of the last five on a subjective basis. How can I protect myself again from getting into trouble by discriminating against somebody?
Well, if you're talking about that last group of people, these last five, you're really talking about an interviewing process that's related to the job, that's valid and related to the job. Now, if you want, you can have third-party consultants basically develop the interviewing process for you and train you on the interviewing process so that it is valid. I mean, it would be bad practice in merging and being illegal to have to eliminate the first 95 people with a valid and reliable process, and then to get into the last five people and just use some, you know, hiri-kiri process that's, you know, all over the board. Mm-hmm. So, you want from A to Z the process to be logical, you know, valid and reliable, to make sense, to be, you know, to pass legal scrutiny.
Right, and that's why on the last five questions, as a matter of fact, we here at the Rogers Group often get asked to come up with a set of questions so that all five applicants would be asked the same set of questions.
Yeah.
And then a scoring guide, an interpretive scoring guide.
Yeah.
So, you know, everything starts out equally, and it's as objective as it can be, and in that way it's validated to the job, the final interviewing process.
Yeah, exactly. You hit it on the head there.
You know, it's amazing. All of the companies and the various industries that Tom and I get involved with, when there's issues, all of the issues always come back to the people. And the people could very well be the executives, it could be some of the middle management, or it could be some of the associates. But virtually every issue that a company has goes back to the people.
Yeah.
And what Tom and I like to really strive is never put yourself into the box. Make sure you do the right job up front, whether you're hiring, you know, a president for your company, whether you're hiring a manager, or whether you're hiring an associate. And I think sometimes people take this front-end selection process a little bit too cavalierly.
Yeah, well, that's what's going to get you in trouble, and, you know, relates back to the cliche of pay me now or pay me later. Proactive or preventive human resources, labor and employment practices, generally speaking, is always going to be cheaper than reactive.
Well, I'll tell you what now, Chuck, hold that thought, because
sure.
We are about to take a break. This is Jim Dulles along with Dr. Todd Rogers and our guest, Chuck Krugel. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Listen wherever you are. 24-hour business and financial news. Solid, focused, and informed. The leader in business talk. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
The challenge of change comes as ramped up due to the advent of information age and the interconnectedness of a global community. In a high-tech world, the ability to embrace change, adapt, and respond accordingly is key to personal and professional success. Talking Change with Ann Powers, airing every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, explores the hows, whys, and what to do when faced with change. Embrace the new reality. Adopt transition into your personal power portfolio and tune into Talking Change with Ann Powers every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time. Right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Achieve total wealth management. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern on Business America Radio. Three-Dimensional Wealth is a show dedicated to teaching you a values-based approach to comprehensive total wealth management through practical strategies and expert advice. Take your first step down the road of financial independence. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern, here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote. And then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found a small patch of plastic on my right shoulder.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council. Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
We're back with Business Diseases, Cure Them or Die. To call in with a question or comment, dial 866-472-5790. Now back to your hosts, Dr. Tom Rogers and Jim Velas.
Yes, this is Dr. Tom Rogers, along with my co-host, Jim Velas. We're here today interviewing Chuck Krugel, an expert, a human resources attorney. And we were talking about employee assessment and testing and the importance of making sure that assessment is validated for a particular job. Also talking about making sure that when you are interviewing people that you have a standardized interview process where people are asked the same questions and in turn there's a scoring and interpretive guide that you're using. And right along with that, Chuck, can an employer use or require work simulations in the selection or hiring process?
Yeah, they can. And again, this relates to what we were just talking about before the break concerning using validated and reliable processes. You basically want to have somebody like you guys at the Rogers Group develop a work simulation for the job, for the candidate pool, for the hiring pool, to basically determine, you know, at an assessment center in some type of clinical type setting, to basically determine who works best at the essential functions of the job. You're talking about developing a job description, a validated job description, then the assessment device itself, the instrument, and other assessment techniques that are related to that. And, you know, again, and because it's a, hopefully, and it's because it's a validated process, this way you won't get into issues of disparate impact or any other issues of illegality about it.
Yeah, it's a great thing for employers when they can actually see how people would perform at tasks similar to or the same as what they were going to have to do on the job. And by the way, it's also a great developmental thing for employees that you already have to assess how well they're doing at the job as well.
And ironically, at the seminar I did, this question also, or this issue also came up in the context of sleazy employers who try to get free work out of candidates while they're in the office. So they come in, you know, for 2 hours, do this, you know, bogus workplace assessment thing, simulation. It turns out to be actual work, and then they just dismiss them, and you never hear from them again. So you got 2 hours of free work.
Well,
am I required to pay an employee or a prospect for that?
Well, not if it's just part of the assessment process, but if it was if they actually did work, I mean, you could possibly bring a claim to a State Department of Labor or the U.S. Department of Labor, maybe, regarding unpaid wages. It would be a tough theory to prove, but I would, if it's part of the selection process, no. I mean, if all they're doing is part of the, you know, like just like an interview or any other test, no.
Would they be legally liable at all if they did that? Make people work and not pay them for a couple hours?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say, was possibly they could be. If it's actual work that they were doing, the employer's sleazy enough to try to get away with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so.
Well, you know, Chuck, that brings us to another question, and it'll probably be the last one we have time for today.
Sure.
Everybody always asks, you know, there are several states that have employment at will.
Mm-hmm.
Is that really true, or is that a fallacy in most instances?
Well, legally it's true. Practically, it's kind of a fallacy.
Well, yeah. Why don't you tell us what it means to begin with?
Yeah, employment at will is a doctrine that states that a business can hire or fire any employee for any reason. They can fire them for any reason at any time, with or without cause or notice. By the same reasoning, an employee can quit with an employer without notice for any reason at any time. Now, why I say it's practicality, it's a sort of a fallacy, is that you have workers' compensation laws, you have unemployment compensation, you have other laws, regulations that regulate the workplace and basically dictate how or when an employer can fire an employee or sever, lay off an employee. So in a sense, a lot of these employment at will laws or states are in a similar position to right-to-work states, you know, they're in the same position as those states. And it's really a cost factor you have to think of in terms of when do I fire somebody or when do I separate somebody. You need to determine not just why, but how much is it going to cost to select and hire somebody new, train somebody new. Is this person, what are they going to, you know, what kind of cause of action might they have once they leave? You know, what agency will they go to? Who will they complain to? Are they going to trash my business all over the place and give me a lot of bad PR? Those kinds of issues you have to look at. Are they injured or have they been injured at work, and will this continue to cost me money? So
this at will stuff is probably something that just sounds good, but in practice it doesn't work.
Yeah, and it works if all your it works if the same thing what we've been talking about, preventive and proactive human resources. If you've taken the time and effort to do everything right up front, then it should work. You know, it's not always going to work, but it should work. If your policies, practices, the way you've run things have been sort of haphazard or, you know, in a sort of random fashion, then you're opening yourself up to more trouble, even though there is employment at will. And, you know, I always balance this with very entrepreneurial types of companies who, and entrepreneurs tend to fly by the seat of their pants, and I always try to balance this type of, you know, the type of thinking I just indicated with the more entrepreneurial spirit. These are people who may not be as into the analytical employment processes we've been discussing. So there is a balance you have to work out, but it is there, and even entrepreneurial companies can do the right thing ahead of time, you know, in the first place, and really prevent these problems from arising after the fact.
You know, it's interesting. It seems that in larger corporations, they pay people like yourself to keep them out of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get into the highly entrepreneurial, spirited guys, they pay you to get them out of trouble.
Well, it seems that way, but again, you know, I don't think it is, because you look at all the larger companies such as Mitsubishi, you know, Mitsubishi or Ford that have been hit with sex discrimination or sexual harassment complaints, and how they've how much money they've lost because of them. It's the same up and down. These companies, they may have the policies and procedures in place, but then it's another thing to have them, but they probably, some of them don't train their people well enough on them. And even the law, there's Supreme Court cases that say it's not just enough to have these policies and practices, you do have to train. The people have to know them, they have to know they're there, there has to be an in-house mechanism for resolution. Now this doesn't mean that for a small company of five people, that they have to have their own investigators, their own, in-house procedures and all this stuff, that they don't have to create a bunch of bureaucracy in order to solve these problems. But it does mean that something needs to be contemplated when the issue arises, that they do have to figure something out. It's equitable.
Well, the thing is, the policies have to be followed. That's the bottom line.
Well, they have to be followed, and people have to know they exist.
Right. Well, or conceivably, if they're followed, people think they would know they exist. But, you know, you're right. The training has to be there as well.
Yeah. Well, and then policies sometimes are broad in scope, and there's a lot of gray area in between as to what needs to be done. I mean, you know, a lot of policies say sexual harassment complaints will be investigated to the fullest extent possible. What does that mean? Who will investigate? What will be done? Who's going to protect the witnesses from any sort of retaliation, that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
There's a lot of issues that arise then.
Right, and sexual harassment. All right. Well, Chuck, we've got to conclude today's interview here.
Okay.
Thank you so much for going on. It has really been enlightening, to say the least. All the different facets of legal law that you deal with small and larger businesses.
Yeah, well, mostly small and medium-sized businesses in my practice.
Okay. All right. Well, next week, folks, Jim and I are going to talk about the importance of business values and business value statements, and how they impact profitability. We've talked about values before, but now we want to really provide some guidance in terms of how companies create statements, and again, the impact of business values on profitability, and I think you'll find that very interesting. Now, if the audience has any questions about anything, how can our listeners contact us, Jim?
Well, you know, the easiest way, if you'd like to contact Chuck or Tom or myself or find some more information, it's just go to our website, which is drtomrogers, drtomroger.com. That will give you our website, our email addresses. That will give you our phone number, and we'd be glad to put you in contact with our guests as we go on.
Okay. Well, yes, we can certainly do that. And if you do want to call us directly, we're at 847-562-9766. 847-562-9766. Again, we'll direct you over to Chuck if you give us a call as well. So it is time for us to go now. This is Dr. Tom Rogers along with Jim Velas and our special guest, Chuck Krugel. Jim and I will be back next week, same time, same place, Thursday afternoon, 12 Pacific, 3 p.m. on the East Coast, or somewhere in between for those of you living anywhere in the middle of America. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a great week.
We thank you for joining us today. Dr. Tom Rogers and Jim Velas will be back again next week at the same time with more business diseases, Cure Them or Die, right here on Voice America Business.